Some of my counselors do not like my choice of a Keon princess. But Anessa is different. Empress Alex is wise to accede to my wish.
This is my first time in Denoris, and everything is new to me. I apologized, retreating from dangerous ground. Our healer has finished his assessment of the princess, and he wants to know if anything unusual happened before her collapse. The Emperor frowned, worried.
I do not think so. My cousin was quite the typical Denorian noblewoman. Quiet and refined for her age, though keen on attending parties, as girls are wont to do.
I sensed his impatience and soon begged my leave. I caught up to Dan Sung as he too left the king. Our healer has questions about Princess Yan Sheo. Did anyone visit her in the days leading up to the party?
No. Our women do not interact with foreigners beyond our social functions.
What about Princess Yan Sheo's admirers?
Minor nobles. No one she should have treated seriously. Prince Mai Len and Prince Fei Wong come from good enough houses. And then there was the young Xiao Yun, an impulsive young man, prone to speaking before thinking. His family is of some minor importance in the outer provinces, and to set his sights on someone like the princess displays arrogance on his part. I have not seen him since she fell sick. And good riddance to that.
I hid my distaste. Did you invite foreign visitors to her party?
Yes, mostly from Trisea. Of course, we extended an invitation to the Keon Empress and the Odalian King, but they were unable to attend. But I do recall Odalia sending a representative.
A representative?
Yes. It came as a surprise, for we did not know he was coming until he was already at Mai Kong.
The official's beard bristled.
But we learned he was a relative of the king's, and he was quite contrite. Perhaps his messengers had gotten lost, and his missive failed to reach us.
Who was this relative?
The Duke of Holsrath, milady. Brother to the king himself. He was quite cordial to the young princess at her party, as I remember. We rarely have people from Odalia at important functions, and she was quite pleased that he had come all the way to make her acquaintance.
The head cook of the Denorian palace's kitchens, while understandably frightened, displayed that brand of courage common in those who take immense pride in their work and refuse to leave his domain for something so trite as a hostile takeover. The dark Asha had chosen not to impinge on his territory, asking for very little in her choice of viands during our stay, but it was difficult to scale back on banquets when you had spent most of your life serving as an emperor's chef. Today was a different story. Word of Princess Inessa's visit was quick to spread, and at the Bone Witch's command, a table was wheeled into the throne room, sideboards groaning with many Denorian delicacies, sweet and sour pork in a delicate plum sauce topped with coriander, diced chicken in simmered dried chili and fried peanuts, strips of roasted duck wrapped in celery and served in a sweet potato and vinegar soybean sauce. Fried wonton and lamb dumplings rounded out the sides of the silver plates. This was a banquet fit for kings, and my mouth watered from the savory smells as each tray was uncovered. Not even the princess remained unaffected for long. She eyed several of the dishes with longing and appeared to be summoning every measure of willpower not to reach for the nearest plate. "These aren't just for display," the Asha reminded her. "They're all quite edible. I'm not that hungry." A small growl issued from her stomach, amplified by the silence. "If you've been traveling with the army, then you've had little to eat in the last few weeks. The food is not poisoned, if that's what you're concerned about." To prove it, the Asha selected a small strip of chicken and bit into it. "Bard, you are more than welcome to join us." I confess that my hunger was quick to overpower my good manners. I reached for a piece of lamb dumpling. It tasted like heaven. "Bard?" The princess stared at me, then back at her. "He is here to tell your story because you have no intentions of surviving this, do you?" "Why are you here, Inessa? Judging from the lack of guards in your wake, you told no one you were coming, not even Fox." I'm good at sneaking in and out of palaces, and I've had ample time to explore the Denorian Palace, as you know. You stationed no guards. Your entrance did not escape my Deva's attention. It takes great courage to walk past them, knowing full well what they can do. The princess gulped. I was terrified, but I know you could not possibly be the monster they are making you out to be. Please, Tia, stop this madness. Kaelin would not have approved of you seeking revenge on his behalf. The Bone Witch ladled out tea into three porcelain cups. I am not doing this for revenge on Kaelin's behalf, Inessa.
Prove me wrong.
Kaelin, the princess is asking for you. The princess froze, mouth agape, when Lord Kaelin and Kalad stepped into the room. She rose to her feet and fought to maintain her composure, though her voice still trembled.
The elders told me that it's not possible.
The elders told you many things that are not possible, the Bone Witch said.
20.
You swore the Duke was there?
Kalad asked as he examined Prince Kanz's heart's glass. For the last couple of days, the forger had shut himself in his room, only leaving to examine Princess Yansheo. While we were treated like honored guests, we still could not leave the palace compound to explore the city. Both Kaelin and Fox had been keen to defy the orders, but Inessa and Zoya convinced them otherwise, arguing it was too big of a risk to attempt at the moment. The hunt for the Sovul was still underway, but without our help, it was a slow process. Princess Inessa frowned. Today she was dressed in riding breeches and a plain shirt, much to my surprise.
That's impossible, isn't it? How can the Duke be in two places at once? Is there a rune for something like this, Tia?
I know of an illusion rune that might be feasible.
Whoever did it could draw Heart's Rune.
Kalad turned Prince Kanz's heart's glass, as if the glint from it could unlock secrets from within.
I've seen a Holzrath's heart's glass, and he has no inclination for it. What about the other Denorian suitor?
Xiaoyun? Nobody's seen him since the party. His family lives in the Mekong province, so it's going to take a while to reach out to them for questions about his whereabouts. From what Zoya's gathered, the boy is something of the family's black sheep. He hasn't been home in months.
I've been talking to Bao Yi, like Zoya suggested,
Kalad said.
He has his men combing the city, but has found little.
But you're sure you can find your master?
I think so. I know a few things Bao Yi doesn't that I'd rather not share. He seems trustworthy enough. He relies a lot on his clerk, who seems pretty competent and good at keeping his master's secrets. But I can't say the same for any soldiers.
He looked worried.
Normally I would trust Master to look out for himself, but this feels different. I hope he's all right.
Would you like to hold it? Inessa asked suddenly, offering Prince Kanz's heart's glass to me.
What?
I don't need to learn to read heart's glass to see how worried you are for him. I don't know how much you can see, but...
I nodded, my fingers hovering over the delicate case. Prince Kanz's heart's glass felt warm even from there. I could see a steady pulsing nearly hidden within its depths, like a heartbeat.
Draw Heart's Rune over it, Tia,
Kalad instructed.
The wards are still here, Kalad.
The white-haired boy only grinned.
Just do it.
I obeyed, and was stunned to see the rune shimmer into life. Wisps of it settled around Prince Kanz's heart's glass like a cloak, and flared up again, images blooming at its center. I spotted glimpses of memory, of Kanz as a child, playing tag with Kaelin and Kalad while Inessa toddled after them, begging to join them. Of him as a teenager, poring over heavy tomes and old parchments, of riding on horseback at his father's side as they explored the limits of their kingdom's territories. I saw sadness and grief from his mother's passing, carefully bottled away. I saw compassion and understanding as he calmed a weeping Kaelin when word reached them of Holzrath's imprisonment. I saw fear and worry as he watched Kalad's heart flame silver, marking his brother's path away from the throne and into the often unappreciated life of a heart forger. I saw resignation mixed with determination when he was made King Telamine's heir, no longer the second son, but next in line to rule Adalia. I saw the comfort and strength he derived from having Kaelin as a protector, Kalad for his support, and Princess Anessa as a trusted friend and confidant. But I saw no romantic love for her was there. And then I saw our first meeting, watched as I blushed and stumbled over my words with Fox grinning by my side. I saw the falling leaf Chahana and how he kept his head, kept me safe from the horde of skeletal rats I resurrected. I saw his admiration and respect as he watched me take down the Aishma, his pleasure and happiness when I presented him with that ill-fated pendant for his birthday. But though I scoured his heart's glass, I could find no love for me either. I bowed my head. I had never expected it, surely never demanded it, whatever my feelings for him. But the blow wasn't as bad as I had expected. A few months ago this might have devastated me. Now I felt only a wistful sadness. And, inexplicably, like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders, that revelation stunned me.
"Do you want to talk about it?"
I could hear Fox ask. "There's nothing to talk about. I don't chase after people who don't feel the same way about me as I do about them. Who I just realized I don't have feelings for that I thought I had. Didn't you do the same thing with that Jezebel girl and her Maharvin?"
"It's Gizabel. And why do you keep remembering that blasted man's name but not—"
I giggled aloud and stopped. Khaled and Anessa were goggling at me. "Sorry, I was thinking of something else." "You're not angry?" Anessa asked. "Actually, I feel relieved. As odd as it sounds. I'm sorry." "I'm not. I don't regret it." And then I did a double take. "You knew?" The princess laughed. "Not this, no. If anything, it confirmed something else I had already suspected. How did you do that, Kalad?"
"Heart's rune is a forging rune more than it is a regular rune or a dark one, though we can all draw from it. Wards block both offensive and defensive magic, but forging is neither."
"I didn't know this," I confessed, though that somehow made sense. Kalad grinned.
"We don't give away our secrets. Weren't you due at the courtyard for practice with Kaelin?"
"I'm coming with you, Tia." The princess tucked Kansa's heart's glass inside her shirt. "I'm supposed to be training with Fox." "Thank you." It was easy to underestimate Kalad. He was quiet and unassuming, but there was a reason the old heart forger had chosen him for his successor.
"Don't mention it. Zoya and Shadi should be along soon."
His silver heart's glass gleamed. "This too shall pass," it seemed to tell me. "There's something I want to talk to you about while we walk," Princess Anessa said. "Something I'd like your opinion of. It's about my engagement to Shifang."
"What about it?" I asked.
She flashed me a grin. "I might know a way to wriggle myself out of it." Kaelin and Fox were already in the courtyard, and so were an alarming number of guards and courtiers who had come to watch. To my astonishment, Emperor Shifang was present, and so were Tan Sung and Bao Yi. Lick was also beside the Denorian ruler, his tall, slim figure wrapped in the exquisite peach and silver hua Rahim had made for him, with a cluster of shorter women in flowing silks nearby. Obviously, they were some of the royal concubines. The emperor made no bones about paying court to the male Asha, having taken the latter's hand in his. Lick was looking around frantically, trying to find an excuse to step away without causing offense. But all eyes soon turned to Princess Anessa. Aside from her casual shirt and breeches, her hair was pulled back and her face unadorned. Tan Sung was sputtering.
"Princess, it is scandalous to wear such clothes in public!"
"This is what the women of my kingdom wear for sword practice, my lord,"
Princess Anessa said gravely. It is our custom.
But you have no need for a sword. You are the Emperor's betrothed.
For as long as I have a kingdom, then I will always have need of a sword. And I am prepared to fight for it as well as any man here.
There were a few murmurs among the Denorians. Emperor Shifang asked Tan Sung a question, and the officials stuttered out a response. The Emperor laughed and clapped his hands. Lick took the opportunity to move away to my side.
I was so sure he was going to find out about me.
He breathed. Lick, you're more feminine than I am.
Oh, I wasn't referring to that. Although that had me worried, too. I was snooping around the palace when he found me and asked me to accompany him here.
What were you looking for?
I was looking at the palace wards. Kaelin was right. It's more complicated than regular spells, but I think there's a way to untangle them.
Are you definite about this, Lick?
He grinned. It's similar to Zavar making, really. Think of magic as a spool of yarn. You can make complex patterns with it, but sometimes some of Chesh's spells get a little too heavy for the accessories we use. I'm usually the one tasked with unraveling the thread back into the spool, so to speak. It just takes patience.
You know I don't understand half of what you're saying, right?
I guess it's something those with purple hearts glass understand more than those with silver, the Asha admitted. Give me more time to figure it out.
His Majesty has had training with the sword as well,
Bao Yi translated, looking like he'd taken a bite of lemon.
If the princess wishes to defend Dolores together with him, he would enjoy an exhibition of her prowess.
It was clear Bao Yi wanted to express more of his views about that, but his secretary tugged nervously at his sleeve, shaking his head.
Would you like to spar with me, Your Majesty?
The princess sounded coy. If anything, the Emperor laughed even harder. Already, a servant was hurrying forward with a small, ornate sword, the hilt meticulously covered in jewels despite its wooden blade.
Are you sure you want to let this happen?
I hissed at Fox.
I know enough about etiquette not to scold the princess in front of another kingdom's emperor. Besides, she's good enough to beat him. Look at how he carries his sword. The gems on it are too polished to be anything but ceremonial. The emperor might think himself competent, but I know he isn't.
That's exactly what I was afraid of.
Tan Sung was frantically shaking his head, issuing admonitions in Denorian. The emperor paused and made a counteroffer.
No fighting, the counselor said,
this time to us.
Instead, the emperor and the princess shall display their skills for the public to judge.
That sounded like the better choice to me. Our host's hospitality would come to an abrupt end should Princess Anessa accidentally skewer the Emperor with her blade. Shifang started first. His series of maneuvers were nothing special, similar to the ones I was taught as a novice. Princess Anessa responded with more intricate movements, her sword slicing through the air with precision. I was impressed. Fox was either an extremely good teacher or she was an exceptional student. The Emperor, however, was clearly not pleased. The routine he performed next was a little more complicated than his first, though still not up to par to the princess's initial display. The applause was louder when he finished, but not entirely genuine. Princess Anessa watched him carefully and proceeded to sabotage herself when her turn came. Dropped swords, flimsy moves, and clumsy spins.
I must concede to the Emperor, she announced as she ended. I cannot begin to match his skill, and it would be futile to continue this further.
The message was relayed back to the Emperor, whose spirits were noticeably buoyed. I felt Fox scowl. Princess Anessa bowed prettily to the Emperor and handed her wooden sword back to my brother, her hand now tightly clutched over her collar, as was her habit. Lose the battle to win the war, I reminded Fox.
I know, but I can't stand that she's forfeiting to that insufferable ass.
One soldier glanced over at me and said something to his comrade. They laughed. Kaelin snarled something in Denorian, cutting off their laughter. Then one of the men offered what sounded like a challenge. Kaelin's face broke into a wolfish grin.
We're going to do something different today, Tia.
You're going to face off against those two arrogant idiots in mock combat.
What?
At the risk of sounding immodest, fighting me is a lot different than fighting two guards who can barely tell which direction to parry. I've seen them spar. Trust me, you'll do fine.
But...
anything I wanted.
Kaelin's voice was soft and studied.
You promised me, you remember. It's a good way to measure your progress,
Fox murmured.
If it means anything to you,
Kaelin continued.
He said you didn't look like you knew how to use a man's sword,
except to act as its sheath. Really? I stared hard at the men.
Really?
Well, there's a compelling reason to hit their faces with something sharp.
Are you sure?
Trust me.
Kaelin's voice sounded odd, any emotion in his tone stifled. But there was a quiet confidence in the way he looked at me, and that gave me courage.
Okay.
One of the men lagged behind as the others strode forward to face me first. I held my sword at an angle, waiting. He had several inches over me, though was still not as tall as Kaelin. But the Death Seeker had trained me to calculate my reach against people of varying heights. By the time he'd shifted his sword and lunged, I knew what to do. My blow took him by surprise. The insult still had me seething, and I'd placed more strength into it than I normally would have, knowing it would hurt worse. The man's sword passed harmlessly over my head because I had already ducked and slammed the tip of my blade up into his chin. A regular sword might have decapitated him. This knocked him out immediately. The crowd cheered, Lick and the concubines being the loudest.
Don't get cocky!
Kaelin yelled at me. Not wanting to suffer the same fate as his friend, my second opponent was cautious, circling me and biding his time. I took the initiative this time, striking only to have it parried. Without pausing, I moved again and scored a glancing blow on his side. The man was fairly competent, but I'd been training with the best fighter in Odalia for months. To be competent was no longer enough to beat me. I delivered quicker, more decisive hits on his legs and shins while he desperately tried to move his blade in time to counter mine. But I was faster. I might not have been as strong, but my mind was mapping the holes in his defense, finding the best moves to use. My training wasn't enough to fight Kaelin on equal terms, but it made me much more than adequate when facing others. I just hadn't realized it before. I spun, angling my sword as if to attack his midsection. He moved to block, and I switched targets in mid-blow. The man dropped to the floor, stunned and a little concussed. The courtyard was silent. Inessa and Lick stared at me in awe, but Fox was beaming. Tansung looked at me with amazement, and Bao Yi was silent, though there was a small, reluctant smile on his face. Even the Emperor was studying me carefully, like he was seeing me for the first time. A loud sound broke the quiet.
That's my Tia!
Never had I ever seen Kaelin laugh that long or that loud. He was nearly doubled over, one hand against the wall to hold himself up. There was no derision in his heart's glass, none of the dry amusement usually on display. There was only pride. Fierce, unabashed pride.
You have an ulterior motive for coming here, Princess, the Dark Asha said. You aren't here to ask me to stop my work. You're here to plead for my brother's life. Princess Inessa stiffened.
I will not deny that. If you die, then so will he.
Every action I do against the kingdoms and the Elder Asha will increase the likelihood of retaliation against him. He knew the risks. You knew the risks. The noblewoman trembled.
I don't care.
The Dark Asha smiled and took the princess's hands in her own. You trusted me enough to walk past the Deva guarding the palace, knowing you would not be harmed. Trust me for a little bit longer.
Is there no way for me to change your mind?
If I succeed, then you will have everything you want. No more wars, no more Deva. She turned back to the window. No more magic, she added softly.
How is he?
The princess hesitated.
Worried about you.
I watched the Asha's lips move, sounding each word carefully, afraid that they might take the shape of other emotions she did not want to voice aloud.
Tell Fox I am sorry for everything, but there is no turning back now. Apologize to him yourself, Tia!
The princess rose from her seat, trembling with anger.
He's been waiting for you for all these months. He can no longer sense your thoughts through your bond, but he refuses to believe you've abandoned him. Even now he waits.
The Bone Witch folded her hands behind her back.
I did it with his best interests in mind. Then come with me to see him.
What would you have me say, Inessa? The dark Asha's voice hinted of winter.
Would you have me return to Kion to be tried and executed for crimes I did not commit, for my brother to die with me? You told me of your grandmother's dalliance with a familiar. Did she regret it? Will you regret loving a dead body given a semblance of life? In time, you will resent him for not being human. Will you spend the rest of your life loving a corpse, Inessa?
The princess was pale.
You have no right to speak to me that way. My brother lives because of me. I have every right. If you are innocent, then my mother will do nothing. The Willow's influence is far too ingrained in Kion's psyche to grant me a fair trial. But you killed her, Tia. Fox saw you.
The Bone Witch's hands clenched. I heard the rumblings of the Deva outside, the Aishma's hiss.
You killed so many people, Tia. They were your friends. Enough!
The Deva's howling grew. Then came the sound of stones shattering. One of the beasts had struck a column, destroying it with a violent sweep of its tail. And then Lord Kaelin appeared, his hand on her shoulder. The dark Asha closed her eyes and took long, steady breaths. The Deva quieted, but was still uneasy.
If I cannot convince you of my innocence, Your Highness, then there is no hope for me, and we do nothing now but waste time. You have my word that I will do everything in my power to save Fox. I make no promises for everything else.
The Bone Witch's hands unfurled. Her nails had scored deep, painful-looking grooves into her skin, red blood dripping down the floor.
21. The number of soldiers is often directly proportional to the importance of the noble in tow. In Prince Kansa's case, over half of the standing army had been dispatched to protect him while I slew the Aishma. The Emperor of Denoris was not only the troops' undisputed leader, but was also venerated by the people as a god-king, so nearly the whole army turned up for the hunt. To my horror. Deva are not predictable creatures, and my worry during Kansa's excursion was magnified tenfold here. Emperor Shifang was just as adamant about seeing me in action, perhaps inspired by my impromptu match against his soldiers. Inessa was as insistent, too. Kalad, the most prudent noble of the bunch, elected to stay behind with Lick and Shadi. Both Tansung and Baoyi accompanied the Emperor. Zoya was practically purring, here in the open, away from the palace, where we could once more channel runes. As soon as the wards were gone, I had instinctively reached out to find the Ozzy, and the relief when it responded to my thoughts was enormous. I had taken the opportunity to scan the Emperor and his officials with scrying, but could not find anything out of the ordinary. Shifang was oftentimes too concerned with himself or his thoughts to be relevant. Tansung's mind thrived on petty details such that most issues of substance were beyond his capacity. Baoyi's thoughts were calm, his mind sorting through the paperwork still needing work in the palace, though that was overlaid by apprehension concerning the Deva we now hunted. Experience told me this did not exempt them from an alliance with any of the Faceless. But it seemed less likely somehow. Fox was quiet. We were riding separately for once, with me on chief and him on a gray Denorian stallion beside the princess. I understood the emotions thrumming through his head. Anger and annoyance that Anessa was along for the ride and the same frustrations I felt about the potential casualties. But riding at the forefront was grim eagerness. We were finally going to face the David that killed him. Revenge had been a long, exhausting road, and we were nearing the end. I rode with Kaelin. We had little chance to talk since reports came of the Sovel being spotted near Lake Kahl. In this vast expanse of fields and small hills, I could feel the Ozzy more keenly in my mind. Free of care, it coasted along the edges of Denoris far above the clouds, aimless and happy. I envied it. Kaelin?
Hmm?
His eyes were trained ahead, where the lake gleamed back at us. I toyed with the sword on my hip. You always said my fighting wasn't up to par.
That's true.
I glowered. I would have appreciated a little more encouragement.
There's no encouragement on the battlefield, Tia. Surviving means you've improved, but that doesn't guarantee living through the next fight.
We were the first to reach the lake. I dismounted quickly, as did he, and heard the others behind us following suit. I stared out into the waters. It looked no different to me than the lake back home, and I wondered if the Sovel, too, had made Lake Kahl its home the way Ozzy had made Lake Stripnik its residence.
It's so peaceful here, Princess Anessa murmured.
Be on your guard, Princess, Zoya told her. We're in the Davis territory, not the other way around. Fox, don't let her out of your sight.
I'm not planning to.
The princess frowned.
I'm not going to run around and get myself lost, Zoya. I'm not a child.
When you decided to tag along, you became exactly that,
my brother told her. The girl muttered something under her breath. They had finally stopped avoiding each other outside of training, though being civil was still difficult. The Emperor looked around disdainfully and issued a question.
What did he say? I asked Zoya.
The Emperor may look regal, but I'm not sure if he takes his brains out to exercise often enough for my taste. He wants to know why the Sovel hasn't shown up yet. Do you sense anything amiss?
I directed my thoughts toward the blue waters. I felt the Ozzy graze against my mind. No, there's nothing here.
The Sovel may have moved on, Anessa suggested.
It's a creature of camouflage, Zoya said. It can mask its presence well enough that you would barely know it was there until it was on top of you.
But if Tia couldn't sense anything...
No,
Fox broke in quietly.
It's nearby.
How do you know that?
Because I can sense it.
Fox clutched at his chest. His face was strained, but I could not feel his pain.
Fox?
My scars... hurt.
Anessa drew in her breath.
Was this the Deva that...
I want most of your soldiers surrounding the king and Princess Anessa at all times.
Kaelin instructed Tensung.
Do not approach the lake until we investigate. I want the rest to spread out and search. If you find it, do not engage the beast in battle. Do not attack, and neither should you incite it to attack you. Avoid it at all costs and report to either Lady Tia or me immediately.
He was already on his horse, leaving me to glare at his retreating back as they rode away.
Fox, stay with Anessa.
Tia, where are you going?
I ignored him and clambered up Chief to ride after the Death Seeker. He was deliberately ignoring the other groups of men, making for the thicker parts of the woods surrounding the lake all on his own. I caught up to him a few minutes later. Trees hid the lake from view, and within the heavy cluster of trees it was like no one else was around.
Are you seriously thinking of facing the Deva on your own? I demanded, sliding off my horse.
Kaelin was already standing, sketching out runes in the air. I watched as light flickered dimly, drifting higher up into the trees and bathing our surroundings in a soft, muted glow. Another rune was directed toward the ground, and I felt it spread, stretching out into the distance.
I can look after myself.
What is that?
A tremor rune. If there's anything large and heavy coming our way for a good 30 miles around us, I'll know.
What if it's in the lake?
Same premise.
He stared at me.
Why are you here?
At the fight, I paused. I'd seen pride for me shining as clear as day in his heart's glass. But there was another, much more profound emotion there, too, though I couldn't describe it. He hesitated.
It's natural to feel satisfaction, knowing my training had paid off.
Are you still angry at me? He didn't answer. My offer still stands. You can do anything you want to me. Kaylin's jaw dropped half a heartbeat before I realized why. No, I meant that if I promise to do anything you want... No, that's not right either. I forced you against your will. So now I'm giving you the right to order me to do anything, even if I don't like it. No, wait! I clutched at my head. The words aren't coming out the way I want them to.
I understand what you're saying, however ineptly you phrase it.
He stopped toward me. And despite my earlier bravado, I found myself pressed up against the trunk of a large tree with Kaylin looming over me.
Anything and everything I want?
I couldn't tell if he was kidding or if he was riling me up, as was his norm. There was both an earnestness and a reluctance to his face I'd never seen before, contradicting emotions warring for primacy. Like he was about to tell me something he was going to regret, but that had to be said. I couldn't glance down to gauge his heart's glass. He was too close, giving me little room to move. Little room to look anywhere but up at him. He looked intimidating, almost menacing, despite his lack of anger. But I wasn't afraid. If anything, I was expectant. I could feel his heart's glass flare. With the heart share rune I had offered him back in Keon, I realized. I had not dispelled the magic, while diminished by the castle wards. Out here in the open, it shone brightly.
Do you really want to know what I want to do to you, Tia? Would you still be so willing if you did?
He had never said my name that way before. I could feel his warm breath against my lips. He smelled nice, like pine and musk. The sides of his mouth curved up. The rune flickered.
I want you fighting 5 soldiers next time, he said quietly.
What? He was already drawing back, the smirk still on his face.
2 soldiers is child's play. You're going to improve by my standards and not by anyone else's. I don't know how long we're going to stay here or what Inessa has up her sleeve to wheedle herself out of the Emperor's marriage contract, but if you can't fight 5 soldiers by the time we leave, then you're still incompetent. Your heart's glass is palpitating, by the way.
With a growl, I pushed hard against his chest, but he barely budged. You bum ass! I shouted at him, clapping a hand over my heart's glass. I was so sure that he was going to... I hate you! He chuckled.
Now we're almost even.
Almost? You... Shh! Don't you dare shush me, you...
No, keep quiet.
Kaylin dropped to the ground, pressing his hand against the soil.
Do you feel that?
I shook my head.
Something large is moving this way.
How can you be sure? He stared at me. Forget I said anything. Where is it? He stilled.
It's in the lake.
That's impossible. I would have sensed it when I was... And then it was my turn to drop. The pain unbearable. I had dizzying visions, all juxtaposed on top of one another. An image of Kaylin in front of me. An image of the Aussie in the air, roaring and veering off course. An image of Fox on his knees like I was, clutching at the scars on his chest and howling in pain. And an image of swamp water and marsh and of scale-tipped claws. Fox! I gasped out. Take me back to Fox! Kaylin needed no explanation. He was already on his horse with me in his arms before I'd finished my sentence, Chief cantering behind us. Zoya and Inessa were administering to Fox. My brother was breathing hard, his heart's glass wavering between silver and green. It was the first time I had ever seen it change color. His shirt was stained red.
"What's wrong with him?"
Bao Yi asked in alarm, riding up to us.
"Who attacked?"
"No one." Inessa had a death grip on Fox's hand and was on the verge of tears. "He just collapsed." I tore Fox's shirt open. His wounds had opened up and were bleeding profusely. I traced the bloodletting rune in the air. To no effect. Desperate, I dove into his mind and staggered back from the overwhelming pain there.
"What's happened to him?"
Zoya asked grimly. "He has some connection to the Savul." I turned back toward the lake, allowing the new, strange mind into my own. The Savul might have been good at camouflage, but Fox's unexpected link to the Deva was my only chance at detecting it. It was there. Basic, primal thoughts I could sense but could neither touch nor influence, and a vision of something dark and foreboding rising to the surface of the lake. The Savul broke through the surface, screaming. While it was the color of the blue waters it had jumped out of, it shifted to a spectrum of olive greens when it landed among the grass. It was corpulent, as wide as a barn, its massive fish-like scales shining. Lightning shot out of Kaelin's hands, peppering the creature's hide. It hissed in anger, turning to face him.
"Get the princess and the emperor out of here!"
Zoya yelled to the army, most of whom were staring at the Savul in horror. Tansung was the first to act, grabbing Emperor Shifang's hand and leading him away, shouting at the guards around them to follow. Though he was quaking so hard, it was a wonder he managed to remain upright.
"No!"
Inessa refused to relinquish her hold on Fox.
"I'm not going." "Princess!"
Zoya shouted.
"Stop being a twit and go with the soldiers."
But the girl shook her head doggedly, lifting my brother to his feet and staggering under his weight. I put myself between her and the Savul. I could touch its mind, but try as I might, I could do nothing to commandeer its thoughts, which stood heavy and putrid against my own. I could feel Fox's pain through our bond, but I gritted my teeth and forced my way through it. My best chance at helping him was to attack the Savul first. Zoya had taken up defenses beside Kaelin, fire shooting out from her fingertips as she spun runes as large as she was, sending torrents of flames upward. But despite all their efforts, the Savul simply shook off the excesses and cawed mournfully at the sky. It leaped into the air, its six limbs extending like a twisted, grotesque toad's, and landed on one of the soldiers unfortunate enough to be in its way. There was a sickening crunch, and the creature's head lowered, prepared to enjoy its feast.
"It's not working!"
Zoya hollered. I turned toward the sky. I could feel the thrum of the wind underneath the Aussie's spread wings as it closed the distance. The Savul turned to look, almost quizzically, at my brother on the ground and the princess still clinging to him. It took a step toward us and then another.
"Zoya, take them away,"
I said through gritted teeth, trying to sort out all the different contrary perspectives running through my head as I wove more compulsion. But the runes did nothing, and the Savul continued its inexorable trek toward us, yellow eyes filled with malice. One of the soldiers beside Inessa turned, his eyes suddenly blank. He lifted his sword, and both the princess and Zoya were too busy watching the Deva to realize the danger.
"Look out!"
I screamed, tearing myself away from the Savul and redirecting the compulsion swiftly into the man's mind. I found the exact same barrier that had stymied me back in Keon when the Odalian soldiers had attacked the city. Before the blow could fall, a hand reached up, gripping the blade of the sword. Blood flowed down his arm, but Fox was relentless, ripping the blade away. The soldier staggered back, and Fox punched him, hard enough that he was out in an instant.
"Don't worry about me, Tia. Focus on the Savul."
Zoya dragged both Princess Inessa and Fox away, leaving me to face the approaching Deva.
"Some of the soldiers are being controlled,"
I yelled behind me, and she understood.
A few more soldiers, eyes glazed over and swords raised, were already ambling toward Anessa and Fox, but were thrown back several feet by a surge of hurricane and a quick weave of Zoya's fingers.
Tia!
I could hear Kaelin yelling, but I refused to budge, concentrating on the solitary speck in the sky flying above us, growing closer and closer until... The Sovel lunged forward with its serpent-like tongue extended and jaws opened to reveal several rows of brown teeth. And then Kaelin was there, grabbing me and angling his body so his back was exposed to the Sovel, shield runes popping up around us.
Master!
With a loud wail, the Aussie landed, one of its heads biting savagely into the Sovel's neck before it could strike us, sending deep ochre-colored blood spurting up from the wound. With a horrible cry, the beast fell back, righting itself before turning to face the new threat.
Are you okay?
Kaelin whispered against my hair. I nodded, fighting off my dizziness. The confusing perspectives were now down to only two. My own and that of the three-headed dragon before us.
You idiot! Why did you...
He couldn't have known that the Aussie was on its way. And yet he...
Because you make me careless, Tia.
He punched out more shield runes that glowed in the air as more of the blank-eyed soldiers turned.
What's happening to them?
Same as in Kion. There are seeking stones here.
I wove strangle this time, still keeping my eyes on the Aussie and Savol, who continued to watch each other. I've never seen Deva fight each other before, and I didn't know what to expect. The runes took hold, and I found a glow inside one of the soldiers approaching Anessa and Fox. With all the strength I could summon, I poured everything I had into shattering that light. It broke, dissipating from view, but the soldier gasped. He stumbled forward, blood pouring out of his mouth, and collapsed. I watched him fall, stunned, and tried to move forward. Kaelin pulled me back.
Focus on your pet, Tia.
But...
The Aussie hissed. Its three heads threaded through the air and its wings extended, drawing to its full height and span. Not to be outdone, the Sovel squatted and let out a hoarse croaking sound, blowing up its body like a bullfrog's. Its outline shimmered in the air, green scales becoming more and more translucent until, before our eyes, it faded from view.
Camouflage!
I saw nothing, but the grass bent, web-shaped footprints stamping onto the ground, toward the Aussie. And then they stopped.
It's jumping!
I barreled into the Aussie's mind. We swiveled to face the Sovel just as it reappeared, its scaly body slamming into us. I felt its talons rake into our body, and we cried out, both in pain and with rage. We opened all three of our mouths and breathed firestorm onto the Sovel. It shrieked, the heat from the flames intense enough to burn its limbs and a goodly portion of its body. Runes didn't work, I realized. But Deva could kill its own. The air reeked of charred flesh and smoke, the stench burning our eyes. Our chest hurt, the wounds from where the Sovel had raked its talons pulsating with every heartbeat. I could still feel Fox's pain as he struggled to defend himself and Anessa from the soldiers going after them. Anessa had yanked out a sword from one of the fallen and was training it on the approaching mob, trembling.
Get out of here.
Fox rasped.
I'm not leaving you.
Zoya successfully kept most of the Denorians at bay, but I knew she was tiring quickly. Of the elemental runes, wind required the most strength, and she'd been slamming dozens of soldiers into the ground with it. I was conscious enough of my own body to know that Kaelin still held on to my limp form. I could feel the power of the runes he was hammering in the air, following Zoya's lead and pushing the soldiers away with more wind. But he was tiring, too.
Tia, leave one of the stones untouched if you can. I've got an idea.
Zoya clapped her hands above her head, and a sinkhole opened underneath most of the men, sending them tumbling down.
Copycat,
Fox murmured.
I'm saving your ass, you ass.
Zoya had been around Polair more often than she should have.
Kill, I told the Aussie, not wanting to prolong the fight in Fox's pain, and we unleashed more torrents of fire into the Sovel's direction. It avoided the onslaught, leaping high into the air again. Its attack patterns told me that the Sovel preferred close fighting, relying on its camouflage to get away unscathed. I kept ourselves still, one of our heads remaining immobile and presenting itself as an obvious target as the nearly invisible Deva descended toward us, its talons primed to strike. I shoved away my disgust and poured myself into the Aussie's mind, anticipating the blow. It never reached us. From behind the Sovel, both our other heads lashed out, jaws snapping at either side of the Sovel's neck. A fountain of blood spurted into the sky. The frog-like Deva squalled. It thrashed its nearly decapitated head frantically from side to side, but that did nothing to stop the torrent of russet-colored blood from flowing to the ground, staining and rotting everything it touched. The Denorian soldiers stumbled back, clutching at their heads. The compulsion surrounding them lifted briefly, and I could finally see the source. Two of the men carried glowing orbs hidden within their clothes, and I wasted no time reaching for one with my mind and destroying it quickly. "Over there!" I yelled at Zoya, pointing at the second man, and the Asha moved with great speed. A small hurricane all but slammed the man to the ground, knocking him out. I tried again. My compulsion bored straight into the Sovel's mind without any other interference. I could feel a part of it struggling still, furious that someone else had been given access to its brain. And then, just as suddenly, I found myself punted out of its thoughts as the other presence occupying its head took back control. Howling, the Sovel dissolved from view. I could hear it leaping, this time away from us. And just as quickly, its presence was gone. The pain in my head diminished. Fox staggered to his feet, breathing easier, and dropped his sword as Princess Anessa hurled herself into his arms, heedless of his bloody state, and buried her face against his chest. Slowly, his arms closed around her waist. From the corner of my eye, I saw Zoya rise from beside a fallen soldier. She caught my eye, smiled grimly, and carefully pocketed the seeking stone she had extracted from him. "Thank you." I was never sure to what extent the Aussie understood me, but it was enough. I stepped away from Kaelin and allowed the Aussie to caress my face, nuzzling at my neck and shoulders as if searching for injuries. Finding none, all three heads cooed. "Master." I watched the Aussie rise, tired but triumphant, to resume its exploration of the skies as it had been before we had interrupted its peace. I turned to find Kaelin looking back at me. He smiled, and I found myself smiling back, a warm glow settling over me. "We didn't kill it," I said, feeling foolish for stating the obvious.
"But you hurt the Deva badly. For now, that's good enough."
One of the men rose behind him. The Denorian already had a knife drawn, too close for Kaelin to turn in time, much less respond. One look at his mind told me this Denorian was not being compelled, that he acted of his own volition. I reacted on instinct. The compulsion rune still hummed in the air, but the man was already swinging his dagger.
"Die!"
And missed Kaelin completely, the blade ramming into his own stomach. Blood bubbled up from the soldier's mouth. Wordlessly, he fell. Shocked, Kaelin turned to see the Denorian collapse on the ground. Dead. But the man's eyes stared blankly back at me, wide open and accusatory.
The man had arrived in the early morning, and, like the princess, no one barred his entry at the gates. He showed no fear before the Deva that guarded the doors. His sword was useless in the face of the horrors, but he held it as if that made no difference. His clothes told me he was a military official of some importance. He was tall and broad-shouldered, and his long hair was tied back from his face. But he had the dark Asha's eyes and coloring, and the same stubborn set to his mouth as hers did. He had visible cuts around his face and arms, old wounds that showed no signs of healing. The monsters attempted intimidation. The Nongate drew its two faces close to the man's and hissed out its venom. A snarl rose from the soldier's throat, and the beast flinched. The Sa'vul took a small hop forward, but the man moved swiftly, flinging out his arm so the blade he carried was a hair's breadth from its flattened snout. "Try me," he seethed, though the Sa'vul did not. "You are lucky, you blasted toad, that I no longer feel pain from your nearness, but I will slice off your legs if you so much as blink those hideous eyes. Where is Inessa? I swear by every god I know, Tia, if you have gone so far as to harm her." He swung his sword in an arc to include both the Torvi and Zarek in his threats, both of whom were endeavoring to sneak up behind him. "Unleash your beasts!" Lord Kaelin stepped through the doors of the palace, Princess Inessa behind him. The man's gaze slid to her face. Reassured by what he saw there, he turned to the Death Seeker. "They said you were dead." "What difference does that make? You are still against us." "I have never been against Tia."
"Not from where I stand."
"She killed people, Kaelin. She raised the undead to massacre soldiers." His voice shook. "They ate men under my watch."
"And your men would have massacred these Denorians if she hadn't. What makes you any better?"
"You've changed since dying, Kaelin. Are your feelings for my sister hindering your judgment?"
"Are your feelings for the princess hindering yours, Fox?"
They stared at each other, stubborn to the end, convinced it was the other that was wrong, like the disagreements all wars were made of. Lord Fox moved so quickly that it took the sound of steel meeting steel for me to realize the fight had begun.
"Stop it!"
Princess Inessa cried, but she was ignored. This was not the playful sparring sessions between friends that the Bone Witch had so fondly recalled. This was a brutal fight, waged by familiars who fought despite knowing neither one could be killed by the other. A stroke of Lord Fox's blade was parried. A swing of the sword by Lord Kaelin was countered. It was the Death Seeker who drew first blood. A flick of his wrist and a cut appeared over the other man's shoulder, though the latter showed no pain. Lord Kaelin dealt a second blow to his side, and then a third across his cheek. But Lord Fox rallied with two slices against the other man's shin and hand.
"Enough!"
The air crackled from the force of the words. Both combatants froze in mid-stroke. The Bone Witch stood by the entrance, hands fisted on either side of her. Princess Inessa stood with her, arms folded over her chest, and looking just as furious.
"You've been practicing," Lord Kaelin said. "You're much better than when we last fought."
"And still I struggle to keep up with you," Fox conceded wryly. "You're stronger than I remember. Inessa snuck out of camp to come here," he added in a quieter voice, as they both turned to face their fuming paramours.
"You were defending Tia. Why are we the ones in trouble?"
Without changing expression, the Death Seeker replied, "I don't know."
22. The engagement celebration would push through regardless of the army's losses. Emperor Shifeng insisted it would.
"It is not the custom for the emperor to rescind his own orders,"
Tansung informed us.
"He is infallible. Half his army has fallen victim to someone else's compulsion, and he worries about his infallibility?"
Zoya was in a fighting mood. Her attempts to explain the spell had fallen on deaf ears. It took all our persuasion to keep the emperor from executing the soldiers for treason, finally getting him to understand the nature of compulsion, if barely. The only good thing to come out of this was the emperor honoring his promise to let us into the city. to finally find the old forger. Not for the first time, I cursed my inability to act then.